order to reflect on the fact that things, the subjects upon which a meditator reflects, are empty of inherent existence because dependently arisen, it is necessary to identify the subject of this reflection, the phenomena that produce pleasure and pain, help and harm, and so forth. If one does not understand cause and effect well, it is difficult to realize that these phenomena are empty of inherent existence due to being dependently arisen. One must develop an understanding that certain causes help and harm in certain ways. Hence, the Buddha set forth a presentation of dependent arising in connection with the cause and effect of actions in cyclic existence, so that understanding of the process of cause and effect could be gained. Thus, one level of dependent arising is concerned with causality, in this case the 12 branches or links of dependent arising of life in cyclic existence: ignorance, action, consciousness, name and form, the six sense spheres, contact, feeling, attachment, grasping, existence, birth, and aging and death. Then there is a second, deeper level of dependent arising that applies to all objects. This is the establishment of phenomena dependent upon their parts. There is no phenomenon that does not have parts. Thus every phenomenon is imputed dependent upon its parts. A third, even deeper level, is that phenomena are merely imputed by conceptuality in dependence upon their basis of imputation. When objects are sought among their bases of imputation, nothing can be found to be the imputed object itself. Thus phenomena are merely dependently arisen. When the Buddha set forth the 12 links of dependent arising, he spoke from a vast perspective. He taught the 12 links in detail in the Rice Seedling Sutra. As in other discourses, the Buddha teaches by responding to questions. In this sutra, the Buddha speaks of dependent arising in three ways. 1. Due to the existence of this, that arises. 2. Due to the production of this, that is produced. 3. It is thus. Due to ignorance, there is compositional action. Due to compositional action, there is consciousness. Due to consciousness, there is name and form. Due to name and form, there are the six sense spheres. Due to the six sense spheres, there is contact. Due to contact, there is feeling. Due to feeling, there is attachment. Due to attachment, there is grasping. Due to grasping, there is the potentialized level of karma called existence. Due to existence, there is birth. And due to birth, there is aging and death. When the Buddha says, due to the existence of this, that arises, he indicates that the phenomena of cyclic existence arise not through a permanent deity, but due to specific conditions. Due to certain causes and conditions, specific effects arise. When the Buddha says, due to the production of this, that is produced, he indicates that the phenomena of cyclic existence arise from conditions that are impermanent by nature. Then the question arises, if the phenomena of cyclic existence are produced from impermanent conditions, could they be produced from just any impermanent conditions? No. In the third phase, the Buddha indicates that the phenomena of cyclic existence are produced from specific causes and conditions that have the potential to give rise to specific phenomena. Setting forth the dependent arising of suffering, Buddha shows that suffering has ignorance, obscuration, as its root cause. This faulty seed produces an activity that deposits in the mind a potency that will generate suffering by producing a new life in cyclic existence. It eventually has as its fruit the suffering of aging and death, the last link of dependent arising. In the Buddha's teaching of the Four Noble Truths, there are two sets of cause and effect: one set for the afflicted class of phenomena, and another for the pure class. Just so, in the 12 links of dependent arising, there are procedures in terms of both afflicted and pure phenomena. Among the Four Noble Truths, the first truth, true sufferings, are effects in the afflicted class of phenomena. The second truth, true sources, are their causes. The third truth, true cessations, are effects in the pure class. And the fourth truth, true paths, are their causes. Similarly, when it is explained in the 12 links of dependent arising that action is produced due to ignorance, the explanation is in terms of the afflicted procedure. When it is explained that action ceases due to cessation of ignorance, it is in terms of the procedure of the pure class. The first is the procedure of the production of suffering, and the second is the procedure of the cessation of suffering. The 12 links of dependent arising are thus laid out in terms of a process of affliction and in terms of a process of purification, and each of these is presented in forward and reverse orders. Thus, the forward process describes how suffering is produced. It explains the sources that produce suffering. Thus, it is explained that due to the condition of ignorance, action arises. Due to the condition of action, consciousness arises. Due to the condition of consciousness, name and form arise. Due to the condition of name and form, the six sense spheres arise. Due to the condition of the six sense spheres, contact arises. Due to the condition of contact, feeling arises. Due to the condition of feeling, attachment arises. Due to the condition of attachment, grasping arises. Due to the condition of grasping, the potentialized level of karma called existence arises. Due to the condition of existence, birth arises. Due to the condition of birth, aging and death arise. In reverse order, emphasis is on the first of the Four Noble Truths, true sufferings themselves, which are the effects. It is explained that the sufferings of aging and death are produced in dependence upon birth. Birth is produced in dependence upon the potentialized level of action called existence. Existence is produced in dependence upon grasping. Grasping is produced in dependence upon attachment. Attachment is produced in dependence upon feeling. Feeling is produced in dependence upon contact. Contact is produced in dependence upon the six sense spheres. The six sense spheres are produced in dependence upon name and form. Name and form are produced in dependence upon consciousness. Consciousness is produced in dependence upon action. Action is produced in dependence upon ignorance. Then, in terms of the process of purification, emphasis is on the causes, the true paths, second among the Four Noble Truths. It is explained that when ignorance ceases, action ceases. When action ceases, consciousness ceases. When consciousness ceases, name and form cease. When name and form cease, the six sense spheres cease. When the six sense spheres cease, contact ceases. When contact ceases, feeling ceases. When feeling ceases, attachment ceases. When attachment ceases, grasping ceases. When grasping ceases, the potentialized level of karma called existence ceases. When the potentialized level of karma called existence ceases, birth ceases. When birth ceases, aging and death cease. In reverse order, within the process of purification, emphasis is on the effects, true cessations, the third of the Four Noble Truths. Thus it is explained that the cessation of aging and death arises in dependence upon the cessation of birth. Cessation of birth arises in dependence upon the cessation of the potentialized level of karma called existence. Cessation of the potentialized level of karma called existence arises in dependence upon the cessation of grasping. Cessation of grasping arises in dependence upon the cessation of attachment. Cessation of attachment arises in dependence upon the cessation of feeling. Cessation of feeling arises in dependence upon the cessation of contact. Cessation of contact arises in dependence upon the cessation of the six sense spheres. Cessation of the six sense spheres arises in dependence upon the cessation of name and form. Cessation of name and form arises in dependence upon the cessation of consciousness. Cessation of consciousness arises in dependence upon the cessation of action. Cessation of action arises in dependence upon the cessation of ignorance. These processes are depicted in a painting called The Wheel of Cyclic Existence with five sectors. Within cyclic existence, gods and demigods are combined in one sector. Then there is a sector of humans. These three are known as the happy transmigrations depicted in the top half of the wheel. The three sectors in the bottom half are bad or low transmigrations. those of animals, hungry ghosts, and hell beings. All sectors represent levels of suffering in terms of types of birth. Due to what conditions do these forms of suffering arise? The circle just inside the five sectors of beings indicates that these levels of suffering are produced by karma, by actions. It is in two halves. The half on the right, which is a white base with people looking and moving upward, symbolizes virtuous actions. Such actions are the means of attaining lives as humans, demigods, and gods. The left half, which is a dark base with people facing downward, symbolizes non-virtuous actions, which impel beings towards lifetimes in the lower realms. From what do these karmas that are the sources of suffering arise? They stem from a further source of suffering, the afflictive emotions of desire, hatred, and ignorance, indicated by the innermost circle where a pig, a snake, and a rooster are depicted. The pig symbolizes ignorance, the snake hatred, and the rooster desire. In some versions of the painting, the pig grasps the tails of the rooster and the snake in its mouth, indicating that desire and hatred have ignorance as their root. Also, the rooster and the snake grasp the tail of the pig in their mouths to indicate that each furthers the other. These three circles, moving from the center outward, show that the three afflictive emotions of desire, hatred, and ignorance give rise to virtuous and non-virtuous actions, which, in turn, give rise to the various levels of suffering in cyclic existence. The outer rim, symbolizing the 12 links of dependent arising, indicates how the sources of suffering, actions and afflictive emotions, produce lives within cyclic existence. The fierce being holding the wheel symbolizes impermanence, which is why the being is a wrathful monster. Once I had such a painting drawn with a skeleton rather than a monster, in order to symbolize impermanence more clearly. The moon on the far right side indicates liberation. The Buddha on the left is pointing to the moon, indicating that the liberation that causes one to cross the ocean of suffering of cyclic existence should be actualized. The 12 links of dependent arising are symbolized by the 12 pictures around the outside. The first, at the top, an old person blind and hobbling with a cane, symbolizes ignorance, the first link. In this context, ignorance is obscuration with respect to the actual mode of being of phenomena. Within Buddhist philosophical schools, there are many different divisions. There are many interpretations of what ignorance is. Not only do we not have time to discuss all of these, I do not even remember all of them. Ignorance is the chief afflictive emotion that we are seeking to abandon. One type of ignorance is the mere non-knowing of how things actually exist. However, here, in the 12 links of dependent arising, ignorance is a wrong consciousness that conceives the opposite of how things actually do exist. This is a consciousness that innately misconceives phenomena as existing under their own power, as not dependent. Because this consciousness has different objects, ignorance is divided into two types. One conceives inherent existence upon observing persons, called consciousness that conceives the self of persons. Another type conceives inherent existence upon observing other phenomena, called consciousness that conceives the self of phenomena. The conception of a self of persons is of two types. The first is to cognize one's own person, one's own I, and consider oneself to be inherently existent. The second, coarser type misapprehends other persons as substantially existent, in the sense of being self-sufficient. The former is called the false view of the transitory collection. The innate false view of the transitory collection, which is the root of cyclic existence, is the conception of one's own self as inherently existent, and it arises in dependence upon the conception of one's mind and body as inherently existent. In this way, the conception of a self of phenomena acts as a basis for the innate false view of the transitory collection that is a conception of the person as inherently existent, though both types are ignorant consciousnesses that conceive inherent existence. When we reflect on our own desire and hatred, we see that they are generated within a conception of oneself as very solid, due to which there arises a strong distinction between oneself and others, and consequently, attachment to oneself and hatred for others. Attitudes of desire and hatred are all based on an exaggerated sense of I, are they not? There is indeed a valid I, a self that is the doer of actions, the accumulator of karma, and the person undergoing the pleasure and pain that are the fruit of those actions. However, when the I becomes a troublemaker, we find that we are conceiving a self-instituting I that is an exaggeration beyond what actually exists. When this I appears to the mind, it does not appear to be dependent upon the aggregates of mind and body. Rather, it seems its own separate entity. If it were to exist in such a solid way, then when one investigates it with a middle-way reasoning, it should become clearer and clearer. But in fact, the opposite happens. It becomes less and less clear until it cannot be found. This indicates that, except for its designation in dependence upon the coming together of certain circumstances, it does not exist. It appears to be something that can be indicated concretely, but when we assent to this false appearance, we get into trouble. The conflict between the concrete appearance of the I and the fact that, when analyzed, it cannot be found indicates a discrepancy between its appearance and how it actually exists. Physicists make a similar distinction between what appears and what actually exists. In our own experience, we can identify types of desire. When we see an article in a store and desire it, that constitutes an initial type. But after we buy it and feel, "This is mine," this is a different level, which differs in strength. In the first level, the object merely appears without generating desire. Then, when we feel, "Oh, this is really good," and desire has been generated, this is another level of appearance and apprehension. Upon deciding to buy the article and making it our own, there is a third level of appearance and apprehension. It is crucial to realize from your own experience that, on the first level, there is the appearance of the object as inherently existent. On the second level, there is a consciousness that assents to this appearance, apprehending the object as inherently existent, and thus giving rise to desire. On the third level, when we have bought such an inherently pleasing object and made it our own, the object becomes involved with a strong conception of ownership in which we consider it to be extremely valuable. At the end of this process, two powerful streams, attachment for the inherently pleasing object and attachment for oneself, have come together, making the desire even greater. Reflect on whether or not this is so. The same is true of hatred. There is an initial experience involving a conventionally valid perception of the qualities of an object. For instance, seeing something bad and identifying it as bad. Then one produces hatred upon thinking, "Oh, this is really bad." This is a second level. When the hatred is related to oneself, it is stronger. And when it is seen as potentially bringing harm to oneself, even stronger hatred develops. Thus, the ignorance, that is the conception of inherent existence, assists both desire and hatred. In this way, the cause of all this trouble is the pig. And in the Tibetan calendar, the year of my birth is the year of the pig. This is the way obscuration, ignorance, serves as the root of the other afflictive emotions. This ignorant consciousness is obscured with respect to the mode of being of phenomena. Hence, it is symbolized in the painting by a blind person. Also, since ignorance is weak in the sense that it is not founded upon valid cognition, the person hobbles using a cane. In dependence upon such ignorance, the second of the 12 links of dependent arising, action, occurs. It is called compositional action because actions compose or bring about pleasurable and painful effects. It is symbolized by a potter. A potter takes clay and forms it into a new article. Similarly, an action begins a sequence that leads to new consequences. Also, once the potter spins the wheel, it will keep turning without further exertion. Similarly, when an action has been done, it establishes a predisposition in the mind, or, as is said in the consequence school, it produces a state of destructiveness of that action. And this has the potential to continue unhindered until it produces its effect. Considering the effects of actions in terms of consequent rebirths in the desire, form, and formless realms, there are virtuous actions and non-virtuous actions. And within virtuous actions, there are meritorious actions and non-fluctuating actions. In terms of the way in which they are performed, there are actions of body, speech, and mind. In terms of their own entities, there are actions of intention and intended actions. There are also definite and indefinite actions, indicating whether the effect is definitely to be experienced. With regard to the former, the effects can be experienced in this lifetime, the next, or a later one. Also, there are actions that impel one's bodily life in a general way, and there are other types of actions called completing actions that fill in the details of the picture, for instance, causing one's body to be beautiful, ugly, and so forth. Consider a human who undergoes many illnesses. As in the case of all humans, the impelling karma was a virtuous action. The completing actions that fill in the picture by creating a propensity for disease are non-virtuous actions. The opposite occurs when the impelling karma is non-virtuous and the completing actions filling in the picture are virtuous, as in the case of an animal with a good, healthy body. There are also cases in which both the impelling and completing actions are virtuous, as well as the opposite case, in which both are non-virtuous. Another division of actions distinguishes those done deliberately, those deliberated but not done, those done but not deliberately, and those neither deliberated nor done. Also, there are actions in which the thought is wholesome, but the execution of the action is unwholesome. The thought is unwholesome, but execution of it is wholesome. Both the thought and execution are unwholesome, or both the thought and execution are wholesome. How are karmas accumulated? For example, one motivation may lead to certain physical and verbal actions. Good motivation leads to nice words and gentle physical actions, whereby good karma is accumulated. An immediate result is felt in creation of a peaceful, friendly atmosphere. However, anger motivates rude words and harsh physical and verbal actions, immediately creating an unpleasant atmosphere. In both cases, an action is produced with ignorance of the final nature of phenomena as the background. This is the first stage of a karma. When the action ceases, it imprints a potency, a predisposition, into the consciousness, and the consciousness carries this to the fruition of that karma. In this way, an action creates both an immediate result and a potential that eventually brings about either a pleasant or painful experience in the future. This is how the first link, ignorance, motivates the second link, action, which establishes a potency for future experience in the third link, consciousness. Consciousness is symbolized by a picture of a monkey. Within Buddhism, there are several interpretations of the number of consciousnesses. One system posits only one, others posit six, another posits eight, and another nine. Although most Buddhist systems posit six types of consciousness, the picture is often one of a monkey going from window to window in a house. It probably has its origins in the positing of only one consciousness. When the single consciousness perceives visually by way of the eye, it seems to be an eye consciousness. And when it perceives by way of the ear, nose, tongue, and body, it seems respectively to be an ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, and body consciousness. But it, like the single monkey at many windows, is only one. In any case, a monkey is a clever and active animal, and thus can symbolize these qualities. A problem is that between an action and its fruition, there can be considerable time. Yet all Buddhist systems assert that karmas are not lost. Between the cause and the effect, there must be something that connects the two. Many assertions regarding what connects an action with its long-range effect are presented within the Buddhist systems. The best solution is offered in the consequent school as follows. All systems posit that there is a person at the time an action is performed, and at the time its effect is experienced. Thus, there must be a continuum of a dependently imputed I, which provides the basis for infusion of the predisposition. As long as a system is unable to present a basis for infusion of predispositions, it has to find an independent basis for infusion of those potencies. This is why the mind-only school posits a mind basis of all as the basis for infusion of predispositions. However, the highest system, the consequent school, has no such difficulty since it holds that the continual basis of infusion of predispositions is the mere person, the mere I, and that the temporary basis for infusion of predispositions is consciousness. In this way, immediately after an action, there is a state of destructiveness or cessation of that action, which, it could be said, turns into predisposition infused in consciousness. The consciousness, extending from this moment until just before the moment of conception in the new lifetime, is called the consciousness of the causal time, or cause consciousness. The consciousness of the very next moment, in which connection to the next lifetime is made, is called the effect consciousness. The effect consciousness lasts to just before the time of the fourth link, name and form, and thus is extremely brief. Concerning name and form, name refers to the four mental aggregates of feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness. Form is the aggregate of physical phenomena. In our painting, it is depicted by people riding in a boat. The boat symbolizes form, and the people symbolize the mental aggregates. The period of name and form continues during the development of the embryo until it begins to develop the five organs. At the end of each lecture, the Dalai Lama participated in a question and answer session. I would now like to read excerpts from the first session. Question: could you clarify the two types of analytical meditation? Answer: both analytical meditation and stabilizing meditation are of two types. In the first type of analytical meditation, you are meditating on an object, as when meditating on impermanence. In the second, you are causing your own consciousness to be generated into a state of mind, such as when meditatively cultivating love. When you meditate on impermanence or emptiness, you are taking these as the object of your mind. But when you meditate faith or meditate compassion, you are not meditating on faith or on compassion through reflecting on their qualities. Rather, you are generating your own consciousness into a faithful or compassionate consciousness. Question: how many types of analytical investigation are there? Answer: within the Buddhist systems, there are four ways of investigating phenomena. The first is to look into the functions an object performs, for example, that fire burns or water moistens. The next is to investigate by reasoning based on valid proof. The third is to look into dependence, as in causation. And the last is looking into just the nature of the object, that something is naturally so. I think there are many phenomena that must be understood in the context of its just being the nature of something to be so. It strikes me that this type of reasoning may be used in connection with the topic of karmic causation. For instance, if one harms someone else, then because the nature of that action is to bring harm to a sentient being, the result naturally is that harm returns to oneself. Similarly, because helping another sentient being has the nature of bringing benefit, the effect that returns to oneself is also beneficial. Also, if one asks why consciousness has the character of experiencing objects, or why physical objects are material, one can look into their substantial causes and cooperative conditions. But when one moves the question further and further back, it is probably just that it is the nature of consciousness to be an entity of experience. If one posited a beginning to consciousness, that position would be exposed to much damage by reasoning. For instance, it would be absurd to claim that a luminous, cognitive entity could be produced by something that is not a luminous and cognitive entity. Since there are many such contradictions in that position, it is better to take the position that there is no beginning to consciousness. With regard to particles of matter, consciousness may be able to serve as a cooperative condition in the process of producing matter. But its substantial cause must be something material, since matter must be produced from something of a similar type. For instance, consider our own galaxy or world system of 1 billion worlds. In the traditional Buddhist presentation, there are eons of acuity, then eons of formation, eons of abiding, and eons of destruction. This series of four phases goes on and on and on without end. I wonder whether the substances that produce the particles that are the building blocks during the period of formation are present during the period of the eons of vacuity. Perhaps the particles of space mentioned in the Kala Chakra system refer to this. Even if 5 or 6 billion years have passed since the Big Bang, there needs to be an explanation of what prior causal conditions gave rise to it. Question. Please give your definition of I, the self. Answer. Those who do not have belief in former and future lifetimes may not pay much attention to what the nature of the self is. But among those who do, there are many different assertions. Many non-Buddhist systems posit a permanent self that continues from lifetime to lifetime. They see that something goes from one life to another, and clearly the body does not. They cannot posit something impermanent that continues, so they posit a permanent, unitary, and independent self that travels from one life to the next. Within Buddhist systems, an I is posited, but not in the same way. Feeling that the I or self must be something that can be posited upon analysis, the lower Buddhist systems hold that something from within, the impermanent collection of mind and body, must be posited as the I or self. Certain of these Buddhist schools posit the mental consciousness. Some posit the mind basis of all. Some the continuum of the aggregates, and so forth. However, the supreme of all Buddhist tenet systems, the consequent school, holds that just as a chariot is imputed independence upon its parts and cannot be found among the parts themselves, so a person is merely imputed independence upon the mental and physical aggregates but cannot be found among any of those aggregates. Thus, not only is the I dependently imputed, but all phenomena are dependently imputed. Even emptiness is dependently imputed, as is Buddhahood. All appearing and occurring phenomena are just dependently designated. Question. Your Holiness, could you talk about the connection between the 5 aggregates and the 5 elements? Answer. First, it is necessary to identify the 5 aggregates. These are forms, feelings, discriminations, compositional factors, and consciousnesses. Within the form aggregate, the coarser level is our body of flesh, blood, and so forth. And the more subtle levels involve various winds or inner energies described in the highest yoga tantra. In tantra, there are many explanations of movement of basic physical constituents and inner energies or winds in channels whereby different levels of consciousness are produced. The remaining 4 aggregates are called the bases of the name. These are feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness. The aggregates of feeling and discrimination are the mental factors of feeling and discrimination distinguished from other mental factors. In the Treasury of Manifest Knowledge, Vasubandhu explains that this distinction occurs because discrimination is the source of all dispute, and because one is drawn into afflictive actions, hence into cyclic existence, by attachment to pleasurable feeling and wanting to be separate from painful feeling. Within the 4th aggregate, compositional factors, there are 2 main types, compositional factors associated with consciousness and those not associated with consciousness. In general, when we speak about beings with a physical body, they have all 5 aggregates. But in the formless realm, there are only the 4 mental aggregates. From the viewpoint of highest yoga tantra, however, this is only in terms of coarse form. There are 4 basic elements of earth, water, fire, and wind. The first, termed earth, refers mainly to solidity and obstructiveness. Water refers to fluidity and moistening. Fire means heat and burning. In coarse terms, wind refers to the air we breathe in and out. But on a subtle level, it refers to energies that promote development and change. For instance, in the Kala Chakra system, it is said that even a dead body still has winds functioning in it, because it continues to undergo change. An additional element is space, which, in reference to the body, means empty cavities and passageways. The Kala Chakra system also speaks of particles of space, which are extremely subtle. Scientists similarly speak of minute particles in space that serve as a basis for other phenomena. Those are the 5 aggregates and the 5 elements. Question. Since all appearances and all life are just illusion, is it not inconsistent to say that there are levels of appearance such as those you mentioned this morning? Answer. It is not that life is an illusion, rather it is like an illusion. Therefore, we can speak of many different types of discrepancy between the way things appear and the way they actually exist. For instance, something that is actually impermanent can appear to be permanent. Sometimes things that are actually sources of pain appear to be sources of pleasure. These are types of conflict between the way things actually are and the way they appear. As regards final reality, objects appear to exist inherently, but actually lack inherent existence. This is another level of discrepancy between appearance and fact. Question. How does belief or disbelief relate to ignorance? Answer. Mostly, we have the belief that objects inherently exist. They appear to exist from their own side, and we believe that they exist this way. This type of belief is induced by ignorance. Question. If a predisposition toward an action has formed in one's mind, must one complete it, or is there a way out? Answer. If you are able to bring about a condition that is more powerful than the condition that would cause that karma to manifest, it can be overwhelmed. For instance, through disclosing ill deeds, developing contrition, and engaging in virtuous activity, you can diminish its force such that even if you meet with a condition that would have caused it to become activated, it will not. Lecture 2. Life Impelled by Ignorance. Let us continue the description of the 12 links of dependent arising. The fifth link is the six sense spheres, the inner promoters of consciousness, which are the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mental senses. They are depicted in the painting by an empty house, because the external organs for sense consciousnesses are developing, but internally they are not yet functioning. After this comes contact, the sixth link. Contact is a mental factor that distinguishes objects as pleasurable, painful, or neutral upon the coming together of object, sense power, and consciousness. The objects are visible forms, sounds, odors, tastes, tangible objects, and other phenomena not included in those five. The sense powers are the six organs: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mental sense powers. When an object, a sense power, and a former moment of consciousness acting as an immediately preceding condition are present, a consciousness is generated, and contact distinguishes the object as pleasurable, painful, or neutral. In general, a consciousness is produced by three conditions. The first is called the observed object condition. This is an object that causes a consciousness to be generated having the object's own aspect. The second is the dominant condition, a sense power that causes the consciousness to apprehend only its respective type of object, as when the eye sense power gives the capacity to apprehend visual objects but not sounds. The fact that a consciousness is produced as an experiential entity is due to an immediately preceding consciousness. This is the third condition, called the immediately preceding condition. Because it involves a meeting with an object and distinguishing it, contact is symbolized by a kiss. Contact takes place immediately prior to production of feeling. The seventh link of dependent arising, feeling, is a mental factor that experiences pleasure, pain, or neutral feeling once the object has been determined to be pleasurable, painful, or neutral by contact. Feeling is depicted as an eye pierced by an arrow. The eye is so sensitive that even a small condition will cause a great deal of feeling. No matter what kind of feeling we have, it drives us. Pleasurable feeling generates a strong drive for more, and pain generates a strong drive to avoid. The eighth and ninth links, attachment and grasping, are both types of desire. The difference is that attachment is weaker than grasping. There are various divisions of attachment. For instance, desirous attachment is associated with the desire realm. Attachment to destruction is a wish to be separated from painful feeling. And attachment to the form and formless realms is called attachment to mundane existence. Attachment is depicted as a person drinking beer. This is easy to understand, is it not? No matter that you realize that it makes you fat and you do not want to be fat, you still keep drinking and drinking and drinking it. Attachment increases desire without providing any satisfaction. Grasping, mentally grabbing at an object that one desires, is depicted by a monkey taking fruit. There are four varieties of grasping: at desired objects, at views of self, at bad systems of ethics and conduct, and at any of the remaining types of bad views. There are, however, more types of grasping. For instance, if a person has become temporarily free from desire with respect to the desire realm, and has a correct view but seeks to be reborn in a form or formless realm, he or she is grasping for that type of life and must accumulate a karma that will impel rebirth in that realm. The list, therefore, is formulated only to overcome wrong ideas, not to be exhaustive. In dependence upon name and form, sense spheres, contact and feeling, one generates attachment to remaining with a pleasurable object and seeking separation from a painful object. When such attachment is produced over and over again in stronger form, this constitutes grasping at desired sense objects, such as pleasant forms, pleasant sounds, pleasant odors, pleasant tastes, and pleasant tangible objects. Such attachment and grasping further charge the karmic potency established in the consciousness by a prior action motivated by ignorance. This causes a new life system in the desire realm. When that predisposition is nourished by attachment and grasping and becomes capable of producing the next lifetime, it is called existence, the tenth link. Here the cause, the fully potentialized karma, is given the name of the effect, a new existence in the round of suffering. In the consequent school, existence most likely refers to a fully potentialized state of the destructiveness of an action, which is a functioning thing that will produce the next lifetime. The picture of this tenth link is of a pregnant woman. At this point, the karma that will produce the next lifetime is fully potentialized, though not yet manifest. Analogously, a woman late in pregnancy has a fully developed child inside her womb that has not yet emerged. The tenth link lasts from the time of the fully potentialized karma up to the beginning of the next lifetime. The 11th link is the dependent arising of birth, depicted by a woman giving birth. The child in the womb of the pregnant woman in the previous picture is now changing its state. The 12th link is the dependent arising of aging and death. There are two types of aging. The first is called progressive, since from the moment of conception one is always aging. It occurs in every moment of life. The other type is called deterioration, the usual degeneration of old age. After aging comes death. Between these, there are cries of sorrow and many types of suffering, such as seeking but not getting what you want, getting what you do not want, and so forth. Our lives begin with the suffering of birth and end with the suffering of death. Between these two, there are many consequences of aging, and many unfortunate events. This is suffering, the first of the Four Noble Truths, which we do not want, the problem we want to overcome. It is important to investigate whether there is any way to surmount such suffering or not. To understand this, it is necessary to investigate the causes of our situation. This is the relevance of the entire explanation of the 12 links of dependent arising, beginning with the stage of ignorance. When we examine any type of suffering, we find that its root is ignorance. As long as we have ignorance, in any minute we can initiate an action that will serve as a cause for another rebirth. We have a limitless number of such potentialities for future lifetimes in our consciousness right now. We have been considering the 12 links of dependent arising in terms of one round, beginning with ignorance. In this context, we can see that other rounds are operating simultaneously, since other instances of ignorance induce additional series. Also, one round of dependent arising requires intersection with other rounds. For example, ignorance, action, and consciousness, the first, second, and third links, impel the force producing the next lifetime. But attachment, grasping, and existence, the eighth, ninth, and tenth links, must occur after consciousness and before name and form, in order to enable consciousness to produce the lifetime indicated by that fourth link. Also, Since the tenth link, existence, represents fully potentialized karma leading to birth, at the time of that birth, another set of name and form, sense spheres, contact, and feeling will be operating. Hence, a single round of dependent arising involves other rounds. Since the first of the 12 links is ignorance, and the last is aging and death, there might appear to be a beginning and an end. But since many sets operate together, there is no end unless ignorance is removed. Until ignorance is overcome, there is nothing one can do to end this process. If we consider the 12 links of dependent arising related with a lifetime in a bad transmigration, as an animal, hungry ghost, or hell being, in the former life there was a basic ignorance, obscuration with respect to the mode of being a phenomena. There was also ignorance with respect to the relation between actions and their effects. These two were the motivating force producing a non-virtuous action that deposited a potency in the consciousness. This potency then served as the projecting cause of a life in a bad transmigration. The projecting cause was charged by attachment and grasping, becoming fully potentialized as existence. The projected and actualized effects of suffering in a bad transmigration are produced in this way. If we consider the 12 links of dependent arising related with the lifetime in a good transmigration, as a human, god, or demigod, the basic ignorance is the same, obscuration with respect to the mode of being a phenomena. But the action motivated by the ignorance is a virtuous action beneficial to others, such as abandoning killing. Such a virtuous action deposits in the cause consciousness a good potency for rebirth in a lifetime of high status. This projecting cause was charged by attachment and grasping such that it became fully potentialized as existence, whereupon it produced the projected and actualized effects of a lifetime in the condition of high status. Reflecting on how others travel in cyclic existence increases compassion. Thus, vast methods of meditation are set forth, both reflecting on these 12 links of dependent arising in oneself, whereby wish to leave cyclic existence is developed, and reflecting on these 12 links in others, whereby compassion increases. That completes our discussion of dependent arising as the process of developing a lifetime in cyclic existence. Another mode of dependent arising is the establishment of phenomena in dependence upon their parts. All objects have parts. Physical objects have directional parts, and formless phenomena such as consciousness have temporal parts, earlier and later moments that form their continuum. Gross objects are produced through the coming together of many minute particles. No matter how small the particle is, it must have directional parts. Through this logic, it is established that there are no physical objects that are partless. Similarly, with respect to a continuum, if the smallest moments did not have earlier and later parts themselves, there would not be any possibility of their coming together to form a continuum. However, when any object appears to our minds, the whole appears to have its own separate entity, and the parts appear to be its parts. Is this not the case? Thus, there is a discrepancy between the way whole and parts appear, and the way they actually exist. They seem to be their own separate entities, but actually are not. However, this does not mean there are no objects that are wholes, because if there were no wholes, we could not speak of something as being a part of anything. Hence, there are wholes, but they are designated in dependence upon their parts. They do not exist in any other way. This applies not just to changing phenomena, but also to permanent phenomena, and thus is broader in meaning than the former interpretation of dependent arising, which is limited to phenomena arisen in dependence upon causes and conditions.